always record episode 121 with Dennis Cook.
Early, so Kevin and David aren't here yet, but they'll be on.
Right on.
You're in LA?
No, well, I lived in LA for the last 10 years, and I just moved to Iowa City, Iowa, like 8 months ago.
That has to be a change of sorts.
It's a change, but we've been coming here in the summer for like many years, and my family. My sister lives nearby, and my parents live nearby. And I went to school at the University of Iowa here in Iowa City, and I grew up not far from here. But
so it's all familiar.
Yeah, it's very familiar. But yeah, it's not LA for sure.
Well, did LA start to grind on you, or is it something you'll always like?
You know, it's I go back there for work pretty frequently, but and I'm happy to go back for short periods of time. But it wore me out, and I'm really happy to not just to be outside of it right now.
I feel like if I live in any big city, I could deal with New York, and that might be it. I don't know if I'd want any other place.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. New York's. My sister lives in Brooklyn, and I. Oh man, I don't know. New York is, I find it harder for me than LA. But
well, there's some shitty parts to it for sure. But
did you live there?
No, I've just spent time there. Like I spent about 6 months. It was the longest stretch, and then I just go back and visit my brother who lives there.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And I enjoy being a tourist there. And I've always said, oh well, if I move somewhere in New York, it would. To the city, probably. Just I like transit too. I don't like dealing with a car.
Sure.
All sorts of convenience things like that. I'll deal with the smell of urine or just the random weirdo, but that's okay. I'm the weirdo on the train, honestly.
Oh, hey, I've been the weirdo many a time.
So it teaches you empathy.
Sure. Yeah. I would say that it's primarily driven by the fact that my wife and I have three kids now, and just Los Angeles is just really rough for having a large family. So,
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. But one way or another, I do want to end up further out west. I think that would be nice. I don't know if Iowa is the right place, but probably something like Oregon or northern part of California. I don't know.
Sure. And you're where, John?
Right now I'm on the East Coast, so I've been in North Carolina mostly.
Yeah.
But I'm in upstate New York now.
You know, you mentioned this in a recent, and probably maybe it was in the Pentimental interview with Will Morgan, that you were born in 85?
Yes.
You seem so much older than that. Oh. I don't know. Maybe it's the way that you speak very eloquently and are quite together in the way you talk. So, you know.
I listen to myself a lot. If anyone, it's no special skill. It's just you listen to yourself enough and you pick up on things that annoy you about your voice or things that are interfering with your delivery.
Sure.
So it's an art form, if nothing else. So it's the one thing I do fairly well.
Yeah. Well done. Because yeah, I tend to not talk to a lot of people, so yeah, I'm somewhat on the opposite end of that spectrum at times, but yeah, it's curious when you have to pay attention to yourself.
And the truth is, I get to edit myself. You know, I sound as good as I want to sound, but I never edit anything to the point where I sound like a super genius. But you know, with all hems and haws, with pen and metal, at least I kind of hard edit it where I'm cutting out a lot of hems and haws just for the sake of it exposes the message more. It's just sure. Like, it's more to the point. It shaves off like 5 to 15 minutes of audio sometimes, just like dead awkward air or whatever. And so it's just cleaner and tighter. And so I guess I'm trying to package this. That's the best way to go about it. And then with Always Record, you know, that's like a very soft edit just to make sure no huge gaps of like disconnect exists or anything awkward was said or done.
Yeah.
And that's
I really enjoyed your conversation with Will. There was a lot of things that popped up there that I could relate with. And I also just appreciated you guys going for certain topics. Like Velikovsky catastrophism is something that I've been interested in for a while. And it was nice to hear other people speak about it.
Yeah, it's a cool subject. And I guess the guy that influenced me was Paul LaViolette.
Sure. I know him very well. Or I know him through Camelot stuff. So
yeah. And Camelot's okay. It's a bit sensationalist after a while. Yeah. Once I started seeing the dolphin Superman, I started questioning the whole enterprise. But I mean, whatever. They are what they are, and they've done good work.
I tend to compliment it because it, for its point in time, it really did. It was something that I enjoyed. But you're right. It's not where it is now, just similarly to where, you know, where Red Ice is now. I don't know. I pop back there once in a while, but it's, you know, it served its point in time.
Yeah, now it's plateaued. I don't know. There's something to that notion that information is accelerating and people just get sort of lost in it and frozen in time in a stasis of information gridlock or lock-in, if you like the software analogy, which I usually don't, but it makes sense. Even people who are... I like Jason Horsley's word alternate perception community. I don't know if he came up with it or where it came from, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
You just see people get locked into these tracks. There's not a lot of, it's still very compartmentalized in ways, which is obnoxious or reductionist. So there's issues all over the place, but whatever. It's all good. I've watched plenty of Project Camelot. I just stopped after a while. I stopped watching a lot of people, and at once I did my own stuff.
Which one did you watch?
What, of Camelot?
Yeah, yeah.
George Green was someone that was interesting. I think he was like the retired CEO that had this supposed magnet motor. And he had this little toy that rotated around, and it was cool and all, but it didn't prove anything. And they were making a big deal out of it. So there's sensationalism and whatnot. Paul was probably the best one, even though it was kind of long and he doesn't have a great delivery. He's kind of boring. That's just my opinion. But his material is so interesting, and he's really one of the few to apply systems theory to microphysics. And it doesn't help him in the eyes of any mainstream people that he's into esoteric subjects. But his framework for physics is really strong. He's had it published in International Journal of Systems, which is a pretty peer-reviewed journal. It's not like a joke. He did it based on the zero-point field, so he used mainstream language to describe his process. Mm. It's based on stuff Alan Turing did in the 50s. And no matter what motivates Paul LaViolette, like philosophically, whatever, I mean, look at some of the people who we celebrate in history, these crazy motivations for what they did.
Yeah.
There's no way they're rational. And they come through with all these amazing ideas. So who the fuck's to say what's...
Yeah, in that conversation, did Bacon also come up as a really obscure tie-in? I think Will brought up Bacon.
Bacon came up in my talk with Dean Radin.
Oh, Dean Radin. But I thought, he was talking about it in terms of Bernays and marketing and... I think he may have mentioned Bacon, but it spurred my memory because I think at that same, it reminded me of the Secretary of Agriculture who was Wallace, I think his last name is. I'm blanking on his first name, but he, like, one of his crazy ideas. You mentioned crazy ideas of people, and it just sent me down this track thinking about this. But he, in as an idea to drive up the price of bacon, he had Midwestern farmers kill like 3 million pigs.
Oh my god!
I know, it's a horrible idea, and it as a means to drive up the price of bacon in big cities, and then. Uh-huh. You know, at the same time, there's like people dying in New York from hunger.
Oh.
This was this guy's big idea. He was actually really good friend. I mean, if there's an esoteric connection as well, because he was like, I think he was connected to Nicholas Rorick and what's her face, Helena Blavatsky.
Okay.
Yeah, he was. I think he was under the Roosevelt administration, okay. And I think he went to China with. I want to say this may have been in a red eyes. Mm-hmm. So say, think of it as you will, but yeah, I think he did this big tour of China for agricultural reasons, but yeah, that was his big idea with bacon.
Yeah. I remember it's late here. So my mind isn't firing on all cylinders. So I do remember in talking to Dean Radin, bacon came up just as we were exploring where experimental methods came from and certain statistics and standard methods nowadays originated from investigations into paranormal stuff or parapsychological stuff. And that's a history that's not really talked about, or it's kind of eyed with suspicion or spit on or all of the above. It's just, it's still a valid line of inquiry. It all amounts to what prejudice you bring to it, which is why, like, you get into vortex math and scalar wave stuff, which I assume you've come across scalar wave stuff. I don't know. That sort of subject matter, especially free energy too, which is even more despised, but I think it's fascinating. And if new physics come, I don't think they have a free energy machine out there. There's two that maybe did something. And
which those?
There's the Coria plasma engine, the plasma tube engine. And they also did quite a bit with electrodynamic theory. So they weren't like dummies, which I was impressed by. And it was backed by, sorry, I don't have my video going.
Excuse me.
Okay. you'll have to deal with Dorothy. Anyway.
That's fine. That's
the
fine.
Corias.
Know if I turned mine on, if it affected me.
I've heard it does. I've heard it doesn't. I don't know. It's fine. So far, the connection's still perfect, so it's all good.
Okay.
The Corias was backed by Eugene Malov, who has a lot of integrity and expertise and wasn't in the business of just backing something he thought was BS. He disproved a lot of things. And this other guy, Harold Aspden, who was an IBM patent attorney for 20 plus years evaluating patents and identifying when perpetual motion machines were fucked up and didn't work. And he's got this great archive online, all these articles, and a number of them recount his tales from being an IBM attorney and these really overconfident dudes that had letters from Einstein and Bohr and all these people, because they lived in that era and they wrote to them and they wrote back. People wrote letters then. So they got their letters back. And anyway, none of them worked. None of these fucking things worked. But later in life, he came around to the notion that maybe they could, and he backed this one and said it worked as far as he was concerned. I don't know where they are now. Like, I've tried to contact them. They still have their website up. They sell books and stuff. But who the hell knows? That one was interesting. All I can say is that it was interesting, and it's not like it had certain people backing it that I trust, so I can't say it's nothing. And I'd have to follow it more closely to know what happened to it, if it fell out of repute or something, but I haven't seen anything to that effect.
Well, do you remember the name of the website that was tracking various new energy things?
PSN.
Is that... The dude has been on a number of programs.
Sterling Allen?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just, I think he got busted for something.
Did he?
Yeah, it's, there's a lot of unpleasantness. He's not running that site anymore. It's fucked up. It's like that community need anything worse. And then he comes along and does some shady shit.
I never really, his voice always sounded curious to me, like he didn't, something rang weird to me, but.
And he was weird, and I wanted to forgive the weirdness, but I don't know, that's sad, it's just sad, because he at the very least did a lot of reporting. But now who I really like is this guy, Mark Dancy. I've liked him for a while, but you had Sterling Nail on one side, and then you had Mark Dancy, who was the more sane guy, way more sane, and said, I believe in this stuff in a way, but I haven't seen much evidence for it, which is totally valid. And anyway, he does investigations still into free energy and magnet motors especially, and he's gone around and evaluated a lot of stuff and debunked a lot of stuff. And he's not a phony, and he's not some spook, and he's not a disinfo agent. He's just a guy that's curious and knows a lot what the world is like, the free energy world, and it's not. It's way more miss than hit. And and Ken Shoulders. As far as new physics is concerned, he probably discovered actual new physics that we can use.
What about... Oh, I was thinking of something, but... Yeah, I don't know. Because it's top of mind that it came up in your interview with Will, but I haven't gone full Luddite or anything, but like, because so many of these technologies are simply externalized, you know, indicative of what the consciousness of the people or the thought plane in which people are deriving the and I'm like more curious about how it can be internalized in human biology or biology in general than what device can be derived of it.
Right. That's a good way of looking at it. It's externalized science of the mind. There's a way of how the body transmutes energies and delivers them from A to B to C and back again. And there's a dynamic to it or a process. So I'm big into process physics, and that's like a good way of considering it. And even stuff like Victor Schauberger, who does interesting
science. Oh, that's so funny you bring him up, because I was hoping we would get into that, because I felt like Schauberger's research related to streams and eddies along the edge of water was like a huge first influence for me. So,
And a really cool diagram that I love. I always lose it, but I always have to dig it up again, because it shows a diagram of the river flowing, and it shows how these waves like implode at certain points along their trajectories, and they deposit finer materials that they've picked up along the ways.
Yeah.
And so they hit like some sort of boundary. And so I think of these, wrong or right, when I abstract what space is like, I think of it as a container. And that's an old idea, but it's also still new because string theory uses it, and there's contention over whether it's valid or not. Anyway, you know, a wave traveling in space hits some sort of geometry and it implodes and it delivers some sort of whatever energy, weird energy or something into our dimension or some kind of consciousness or something, right? These places like even hauntings, or I see all this shit is connected. I don't know if it is or it isn't, but I can't help but go there. And so if that's a dynamic going on in a different spectrum, it's curious to know what it can do. And so Eric Dollard's cool too, because maybe it can do free energy, or it can, he called it synthetic energy, which I like. It was weird. He never oversold it, but he's very overconfident. But I mean, I don't know why I should expect much from him, because he had serious issues, but brilliant. I consider him brilliant. And I talked to Tom Brown, and Tom Brown's not a fool, and he didn't really care to hang out with anyone that he didn't find genuine, and Dollard was one of those guys. Whatever he's done recently, which has been shitty.
You know, what I like, I'm not on any social media and I don't know what shitty things has he done.
Well, he was homeless again, probably over a year ago. And a couple guys found him that were admirers that had known of him and had heard whisperings that he was around. And so they found him living out of his car, of course, tricking his car out with all kinds of interesting things and being just a really likable guy. Because he is.
Okay, I've seen those interviews with him, I think.
Yeah, they're good. And those are edited because there's some shit they cut out where he's like being crazy bigoted and...
I heard that, but then I had never actually seen that. Because there was another interview that said that he was, but I'd listened to a ton of his interviews and I'd never really heard him
say. When there was a bunch of shit throwing over him, this guy put out the video of like his response video. Maybe he took it down since then, but I've seen it, I'm telling you. I know what I saw, it wasn't like made up. He's basically done this. There's a repeating pattern for Dollar where people help him and then he bites the hand that feeds him and gets really defensive and says all kinds of slanderous things about what they did, supposedly, which they didn't do. Or maybe they did. And there's other weird... It's just like, it was unfortunate. So, I mean, anyone can look into it. I won't waste time talking about it from front to back, but because it's not that interesting. Beyond him being a fascinating person that's really tortured, like a tortured artist, and maybe he has nothing, but he's a relic, kind of. And his ideas were just... He was an applied scientist. He wasn't some... I don't know. It was convincing to me. There's still something convincing about him, despite all his weirdness.
Yeah.
I can't shake it. Same with Schauberger. It's like there's something there, but it's ephemeral. Or maybe not. I mean, Schauberger, there was... I mean, they brought his technology over Texas for a little while and then tanked the project, and then he died, and no one knows what happened.
Speaking of Texas, have you ever come across the... Well, he's sort of a folk artist in how he's known, but I think his interests go in other directions. Charles A.A. Delshau, he was in Houston, Texas, but he immigrated in like the early 1900s from Prussia. But he was supposedly a member of the Sonora Aero Club, which Tesla was rumored to be a member of. And he was a butcher by trade, but he famously made all these really amazing drawings of flying contraptions. And he claims that they were just sort of the pictorial notes of the meetings of this club. And yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting. If you ever want to look at some really curious diagrams and collages, there's a lot of collage works that simply record all of the early flight records from the newspapers. Yeah.
Hmm. Have you heard of John Searle?
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of that, like echoes of these things, right? And sometimes with the drawings, I have all kinds of ideas about the unconscious, and I think a lot of ETs live there, and these archetypes live there, and people just keep bringing them out in various polyforms, but it's the same shit. It's interesting, though, and some people go out and build them, and whether they fly or not, they're just interesting art projects.
Yeah.
But everyone tries to be like, oh, he's defrauding everyone because it's not going to work. It's like, whatever. If you're stupid enough to pay attention to it or you think it's a fun story, you're paying attention to it. Whatever. It's like, I don't give a shit if the guy plays a trickster. Is anyone really getting hurt with something like that? No. And if anyone's stupid enough to throw away their money on these stupid things, it's like, a fool deserves it in those situations. It's like no one's prying it from their hands. It's like, don't do some research into these subjects. No, it's probably not going to work. If they take your money, I don't know what to tell you. Anyway. It's all worth it in the name of experimentation.
You should check it out. I think you'd love it. And yeah. It's something, his work is, my friend Kurt and I have talked about it. He's someone who, I don't know, I think you would find very interesting. He has several videos, current videos up on his YouTube channel about scalar waves and scalar applications. By the way, just before I got online, I was looking at... I wanted to read a few more things before we sat down, and I got sidetracked by footage of what was claiming to be a Tesla howitzer. Have you seen this scalar wave weapon?
No.
Yeah, I don't know. The guy
is a little... Well, have you heard of Tom Bearden?
Yeah.
Tom Bearden is so entertaining to me that I don't even... care if he's totally full of shit, because I don't think he is. He's an applied scientist. There's all these applied scientists trying to do theory, and it's kind of laughable sometimes because they're criticizable, but at least they're going there. And Harold Aspden, the only reason he was criticized was because they said he was too mathematical. So you're either not mathematical enough or you're too mathematical. And he really, his books are intense. I can't there's parts where he definitely puts it in plain English what he's talking about and how he models space-time. That's Aspen's contribution beyond just being just a guy that evaluated stuff. He was a big on theory, really interesting, and reformulated electrodynamics to make this stuff sort of feasible in a theoretical sense. He was intense, like, just lines and lines of formula, and I don't know who's ever looked at it seriously. I bet there's something interesting there that if anyone really cared to look, they'd find something, but his books are rare. Someone's crazy enough to be charging like $3,000 for his book, like on Amazon. I'm like, no one's going to pay that. I emailed the person. I'm like, look, I want this book, but that's obscene. Like, well, I'm willing to come down to like 800. I'm like, okay. I was thinking more like 70. and that was like really steep for me. But anywho, he's a guy to look into. And there's so many of these characters and they're so interesting. I try to put them in a context and I can only see them as sort of shamanic characters that, like you said, are, what's the word, projecting these sorts of interior processes into maybe can we turn it into something magical to save ourselves, when really it's like something you would apply to yourself to save yourself.
That reminds me of another early Camelot person, Ralph Ring. Did you ever watch any of the Ralph Ring ones?
Yeah, he supposedly was in the spaceship that Quantum lapped, and he's just got an interesting background, like about ping pong balls, like hovering and stuff, and how he was into these ideas. But that's just like, those are parlor tricks, and I don't know what really happened with him, but he's an interesting character and doesn't seem totally fraudulent, but I don't know.
The one thing that always stood out from him that I found particularly interesting was his description of the bumblebee using that effect in its propulsion. Like, did you remember that?
Yeah, sure. Vibration. That was the big thing with the, like, Otto Carr was the guy he worked with. And Otto Carr, right.
It's a Tesla dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's, right, the last apprentice of Tesla. Who knows? Who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
And who knows what happened with that? Like, the proof he said was that they had dirt in their pockets or something.
Yeah,
not,
right.
Not remembering having dirt in their pockets. And who knows? That's easily... That doesn't mean anything. The human mind can be so easily suggested that everyone takes these stories for granted. Anyone that's looked into mentalism knows people can get just fucking fucked with in really simple, misdirecting kind of ways. And so who knows what they remember or what happened. But it's, again, there's a story, who the fuck knows, but curious. Tesla is more verifiable in a lot of ways. Gordon Cliff was built. It was a thing. It was premised on these, maybe the pyramids, who the hell knows. It's possible if someone like Christopher Dunn is right, or other models of those things. But his is the most feasible, just for the time and the place and what they were doing and what they probably had a grasp of chemistry-wise. It doesn't have to be the super exotic thing. It's just a big fucking pit that you pour chemicals into and you get it hot. Yeah, it does stuff. I don't know. It looks like it works for me. Or just like a super hot... What are those things? Like sweat lodges, right? Like a sweat lodge for the Pharaoh. Like the ultimate sweat lodge to really... He talked to all kinds of weird shit, all kinds of weird creatures. So it was either to produce energy for their buzz saws, or it was just to get the Pharaoh really high. Percentages say it was the Pharaoh, but who knows what it was? Maybe both. These are fun questions to play with these stupid things. It's like, who cares? Sure. I mean, who cares on one level, right? But I've looked into all of them, just trying to find maybe there's something here. And I keep coming back to, I mentioned Ken Shoulders before, and that's just, he found these clusters of electrons. They shouldn't be clustering. And he was pulling them out of nowhere with these like little contraptions. He was an engineering genius. He came up with he never graduated from college. I don't think he went to college. He was just a boy genius and invented shit. He invented the mass quadrupole spectrometer, which is a standard technology in all nuclear physics. Weighing, like, I think helium. You can detect all kinds of isotopes with it. So everyone needs it. Everyone wants it. It's always being upgraded, but that's the baseline technology. He invented that, and he was a genius. And he started doing these things in his own little lab, and pulling out these clusters of electrons. And they were sort of like electrostatic entities, because he equated them with like a spark you would get before you touch a doorknob. And so that's electrostatic. So these have to be electrostatic, maybe. But anyway, they might be like these scalar entities, or zero-point entities. He didn't know, and they didn't. He speculated, but it was just the fact he could create them, and they were basically ball lightning, like clustered ball lightning, that they would literally carve out holes and pits into metal plates that he would set up in targets. So they, as a propulsion technology, and as a potential propulsion, as a potential like weaponized thing, it's kind of spooky. But just the fact that it's like, where are these things coming from and how do they stay together? So that's the new physics part. It's like, okay, you can materialize things from nowhere. You don't need a Hadron Collider or some shit. That's all they use it for. It's like, that thing's so useless. The collider. Let's just pour more billions into this. They built this giant ring in the ground. They're like, we gotta use it for something. Let's pretend like we're gonna make a black hole and leak that to the press and make a big story out of nothing. God.
Yeah, but you know, it's been good fodder for various Avengers movies with various portals and things, so.
Yeah, I think. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I'm so happy. That makes it all better. No, but whatever. Do you know much about cold fusion? You'd like cold fusion.
No, but I was going to ask you that. Well, I mean, I know the pawns. I mean, I know very rudimentary stuff about it, but I was curious when we were having a bringing up functional free energy type things. I mean, that's the original experiments are kind of shrouded in a lot of he said, she said in terms of whether or not it worked or not. I tend to think it did, and that.
Theirs did work. I mean, but cold fusion has been shown to be like many types of complicated chemistry mixed with solid state physics. It's two complicated types of physics, or yeah, basically if you think of it as quantum chemistry, if you want to dig that deep. So it's these overlaid regimes of a chemical regime and a solid state regime. And they're no one knew all the specifics of how they were getting it done, but it was producing excess heat and all the objections were garbage. And there were even a couple peer-reviewed papers that got accepted up until the editor, and then he vetoed it and said, we're not publishing these.
Yeah, yeah.
So the good stuff never got into the public eye at all, while all the negative shit that, in hindsight, has been proven to be as faulty as the experiments that they said they were disproving. It's like, it was just a big clusterfuck of no one was getting it right, and everyone wanted to be the person that either that was victorious. Everyone had such a huge ego. So it was kind of gross. And it got lost in the politics, but it's a real science and it's been proven experimentally. It's like the biggest underground science of the last 30 years.
Yeah.
That no one has talked about and no one would dare talk about that they're doing research on it. But a lot of groups and private companies, like Mitsubishi, still does work on it. And they get transmutation all the time. On demand. Their guy, Iromura, I think is his name. He can just transmute elements. I mean, not like complete transmutation, and it's stingy and it's not efficient, but they can do it. So just the fact that you can do it at low energies is bizarre. And it shows that there's new nuclear physics too that we don't even know is there. Or we know it's there, but no one wants to recognize it. So there's always new stuff being revealed all the time. And so again, for a new physics, that's like an interesting thing. And it totally adds to the old idea of, you know, alchemy and everything, and that's a funny twist of fate. The irrational alchemy is a real thing. All these things are real. They're just anti-intellectual, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like Hindu stuff, it opposes the intellectualism of the West. So they're like, oh, it can't be. They could have not have known. But no, they knew. It just wasn't in your language. So we all come to the same truths eventually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have no fucking idea where David or Kevin is. It's amazing. Neither of them are here. But, I mean, this stuff inspires art for you, and that's really cool.
Sure, yeah.
For me, it kind of has in that it's inspired me to, like, that was my gateway into interviewing people and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, I don't know, it opens up the imagination, so why shouldn't people pursue it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you... you said a couple of things in the last couple of minutes that, like, I've had some, like, very spacey thoughts about recently. But so I was, like, trying to meter myself in terms of, like, where I go, what I say. But, yeah, I'm curious. I'm always curious. I mean, I don't know. What can I say? I'm, like, totally disinterested in a great deal of stuff. And there are certain conversations being had that crossover into these types of subjects, and this is like a way of addressing it for me, and art making is just like what I enjoy most. So,
you know, I don't know, like, your aesthetic, it's definitely reminiscent of, say, like Vortex Math aesthetic too, and we've mentioned Rodin back and forth, and it seems like they built that system around the Enneagram a bit, or he am I wrong in that? Maybe you know more about it than me.
I'm not sure. I think that, I don't know if, it seems like that whole school of logic, I mean, it goes back a long way. So it's being repackaged in Vortex Math, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I followed it very, very loosely. And then I had some like sort of weird sinks in terms of the gallery director being next door neighbors to him. And as I was making the inner tube sculptures that are sort of pretty much very similar to the Rodin coil.
Right.
I don't know. I don't really see it as it feels like a cult, but I don't
yes,
know.
That's the thing. I have no disrespect for the Enneagram. It's as good as any of the systems like the Kabbalah or whatever. And people would argue over the finer points of that, but these are all just, to me, sophisticated symbols to sort of rearrange your neurological circuit a bit and get you into a different state of mind. So there's a lot of different ways to do that. No one has a monopoly on that truth, although I don't say that much. So I think that's a bunch of BS. Anyway, but to build a system of, like, say you're going to produce all this free energy from these mathematics, where are these free energy machines? And the Rodin coil, beyond being a beautiful piece of technology when it's constructed, and I'm sure does like certain things that are interesting and might be able to be harnessed in some way, it's not going to save the world. It's just going to be an interesting thing. And so, yeah, from what I have seen, the time I've spent on it, I haven't been impressed, but that's just me. Some people are really into it. That's all good, because maybe there is a hint of something there, because it can't be. That's the thing. You dig these places and you'll come out with some semblance of truth, a piece of truth. There's always something there. So you don't want to ignore anything necessarily. Well, certain things, like certain things. But this is it's interesting. So I know why you went there for sure.
He's a really curious character. I don't know. My friend Kurt ended up having a lot of correspondences with a couple of the people in his circle, and we kind of had some conversations based on that. I just find it I went down it a little bit, and it just seemed like a path that I didn't feel like pursuing very much more and learning much more for whatever reason. I don't know. And
Do you read? Well, I'm not much into occultism myself, but is there any particular characters from that world that interest you?
I bounced around everywhere in that world. And, you know, I mean, I've been following Always Record for a really long time. So it's been a resource for various schools or lines that have intertwined with occultism. And, you know, California is like just piles and piles and piles of occultism. Like, so even if you're not intending to, it's like everywhere. I mean, I have so many stories about like how it resurfaces in California, but I have never read much Crowley. I haven't read any Crowley really. I spend a lot of time drawing, so I've listened to a lot of people talk about it. So that's, and I, you know, I've read some other stuff, but I can't think of any specific character that like I can say I know a ton about that person.
Well, it's just interesting to see how some of them have emerged in the free energy circles. Say Rudolf Steiner really inspired Tom Brown.
Yeah.
And other, even Tesla can be said to have, I mean, he interacted with a lot of mystics like Walter Russell, and I'm sure he had other passing communications with theosophists. And
Walter Russell, I have a couple books on Walter Russell, but and I found him interesting for a period of time. And Steiner's work on color is interesting to me.
Yeah, these are interesting, even if they're considered artifacts. Again, there's always like hints of some sort of way of perceiving the world that are interesting. These ways these people think. And Walter Russell is really fascinating to me because, again, like equating the inventing mind with the shamanic mind. And now it's just like a lot of technologists are projecting. But Russell basically was old school in that he had like a 2-3 week vision, ongoing, on and off, but stretched out for a long period of time. And he got these images and sense for how to piece these ideas together into like a cosmology and a science or whatever. But it's just, it's whatever, just as an art expression is amazing.
Yeah, another guy has really great diagrams.
Amazing.
Like, yeah.
They're timeless. And some of them look like they've been done in like a chalk or something. They have this strange aesthetic to them. The coloring he's used, like either pastel or a chalk. And they're beautiful. And they have the concept of the cube and the vortex is not a bad one at all. I mean, these are geometries that are sympathetic with each other. And as far as like vacuum models go, like the competing ones are always, it's always fluid dynamic models or sort of like lattice structures. So it might be a cube or an octagon, whatever, whatever the geometry of choice is for the modeler. These are, so I just, what I do as a middle road person, I just fucking smash them together. And it's like, okay, if there's a reality, it's probably both. Like these things always, if it's producing both things, it's probably both things. I don't know. I don't know how else to think of the vacuum. It's a fascinating thing because I think, again, with free energy and consciousness, it's probably like where we're pulling the non-local consciousness from. And I think I said this in one of the first Always Records I came on. I'm like, well, if we're harnessing free energy, we're basically harnessing like consciousness machines in a weird way because part of our consciousness is linked up with that. Because our body is linked up to it at the finest level. It's called vacuum polarization. These virtual charges cluster around like heavy ions or other parts of your body. And they're basically these sort of like digital uplinks or virtual uplinks to some deeper thing. And we just pretend like, oh, well, they're there, but they're meaningless. Well, maybe they're not meaningless. So it all depends on what you take as genuine experience. And then you have to find reasons for these things. So I don't know. I guess that's how I was led here. I started piecing that together for myself, but it's still speculative, but neuroscience is basically still a wild west. No one wants to say that, but it's totally a wild west. There's all kinds of room for speculation.
You know, this is a weird story, but, I'm sorry if you say some really, you're saying everything you said there is probably worthy of me responding to in a variety of ways, but I immediately thought of this story that I got. I don't remember which Walter Russell book it was, but I ordered it from off of eBay and I got it and it happened to be a signed copy from him, which was really weird. And I was headed off to a job, an art installing job. It's really crazy gated community in above Mulholland Drive. And it's where Sumner Redstone lives in this community. And then so we were hanging some artwork at this one other family that lived inside. It's like, you know, armed guards and stuff. It's really weird. But I was sitting in this private park inside of this community. And right next to me, and I was looking at that book, and right next to me was a plaque honoring a person who lived in that community who paid for and built this park. And I'm blanking on his name. He's a very famous. Okay, well, Adler, I think, is his last name, but he had a nickname that he went by that was kind of Papa Adler or something like that.
And, the psychiatrist? No.
Here's the deal. I look up this guy. And you know the movie Casino?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think there's a scene in that where they like throw out they like take one of the bosses of the what I think is the Flamingo Hotel and they like throw him out and they're like get out of here. It was Bugsy Siegel's the Flamingo Hotel was Bugsy Siegel's. Part of the movie Casino is based on is the actual story of the Flamingo Hotel. Well, anyways, Adler is named in a bunch of court documents because he was the real life person that was thrown out of the Flamingo Hotel by Bugsy Siegel's crew. And like fired from them, but he was a real estate guy or something, I don't know, but he ended up being named on this plaque, and it was just a weird link to this mafia story that and but yeah, I was reading that Walter Russell book, and I don't know. Stories That Go Nowhere by Dennis Cook.
Well, that's where most of Always Record goes. It's just nowhere, so that's fine. But so I guess what are you still working on with the vortex geometries and stuff, or have you gravitated to something different lately as far as your artwork goes?
Yeah, I don't know. I was making these circular pieces that I was attempting to show an implosive force. So like there is a member, like a inside of a circular, inside a circle, there is this sort of cracking or rupturing of a membrane, of a surface of a membrane, and then a implosive force to the center of that circle. So that's something, that's just the current thing that the idea of circles and an implosive movement has reoccurred in a number of my drawings as a sort of motif. So that's the kind of, those are the bodies of work I'm working on right now. And then I have this concurrent body of work that are these large colored pencil drawings that are these scrambled channel drawings. And they're just sort of the antithesis of the very organized circular works, even though I think they cross over, but they're like, they fly in all directions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hang on. I think David is... David?
David. David.
Damn it.
Hi.
So are you still doing a little collaboration work with Mark LeClaire, or was that just for your exhibit, or what was going on with that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I correspond with Mark, and we have some ideas about some other bodies of work, but primarily it was just for the accompanying essay for that show. It seemed most appropriate in terms of like some of the subject matter. And also it was like just a really awesome experience to work with him on that. And we had a lot of fun, and it was just like, things started interconnecting in a way that was really just, you know, mm-hmm. great flow. And
yeah, he's a trippy dude. And I have only had a chance to talk to him a few times. What did he call me? The Mel Torme of synchronicity. So I appreciated that.
Yeah.
That one stuck with me just as a side joke that I occasionally bring out.
I think he has an awesome sense of humor. So
I will argue with him on his certain points, but man,
sure. Yeah.
David.
Sir.
Yay. All right.
Hi.
So Dennis is on the call with us.
Okay. Hello, David. Sir.
Hi.
Yeah. You guys have been talking for 47 minutes, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
42 and change.
Nice. Sorry, I had shit come up. I just made it to my computer, and now I'm here.
You don't have to explain yourself. Kevin's
I'm
not
trying
either.
To, you know, I don't have to explain myself, and I'm actually not explaining myself. I'm just telling you I couldn't make it, and now I can. But hello, sir. Hello, sirs. How's the conversation so far? You want to just catch me up in 2 minutes of what you've been talking about for the last 47?
Yeah. We were just finishing on Mark LeClaire, so maybe that's a good launching off point. But overall, we've just been talking about free energy stuff for the most part, and maybe how that ties into consciousness. But it's been a back and forth, and asking Dennis a little bit about his artwork.
And various other obscure characters from science history that... And art history, I guess,
yeah,
too.
That mildly obscure.
David, not to rehash too much, but David, are you familiar with Charles A.A. Delchaux by any chance? From art, he was a very obscure folk art type guy.
I don't know. Let me look that up really quick. One of the benefits of having a computer radio show is that I can just... So how do you spell Duchaux?
It's got a weird spit. It's D-E-L-L-S-C-H-A-U, I want to say, possibly.
Okay, my computer's giving me the It's giving me the rainbow. Okay.
David, I know it's not convenient for you to record, but just as a backup, can you roll two?
Oh, I'll back it on up.
All right, thanks.
Like a U-Haul.
Sometimes if mine craps out, I can't even start it up again. So last time it worked out, but I can't get
it. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Deschel. It sounds so familiar, but okay. So maybe Charles Deschel. Maybe if I look up images, I'll get more than
the images are great. I highly suggest the images. All of you people in podcast land, go check the images.
Yeah, all 10 of you people. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Man,
these are trippy, dude.
He was supposedly a member of what was called the Sonora Era Club that was he was a member of it, but another supposed member of it was Nikola Tesla, and they had meetings in Sonora, California, discussing various types of flight. And in his collages, which he had a really great name for, something blooms. I'm blanking. But he his collages often showed a lot of early flight attempts and trans-global flight attempts and stuff.
Totally, I can see that. Very like a lot of blimps and whatnot.
Yeah, a lot of blimps.
Reminds me of The Wizard of Oz, just really quickly, where you have rudimentary flying. I mean, that was the whole... Oh, that's weird. Wow. Yeah, trippy, dude. No, never seen this in my recollection. I can't remember.
I think he was arrested late in life for accused of being a communist. But who hasn't? Who hasn't been arrested?
Who hasn't been called a communist once or twice in their day?
Everyone and their mom.
I know.
Been called a communist at some point. McCarthy, he's called a communist. What? Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I don't know.
But this reminds me of like Nazi Bell stuff too, which I've never verified or not verified. I've talked to Alex Fulton a bit about it, and he is pretty impressed by the research on it. So I take his opinion.
Yeah, Joseph Farrell, that's Joseph Farrell territory too.
Yeah, and Joseph Farrell's done a lot, and he's not bad as far as alternative historians go. I'm always, I don't know, some people are trying to sell some pretty out there stories. Like even Joseph Farrell is trying to sell the space war story as a literal thing. And I don't know if I haven't read it, so I don't want us to jump to conclusions. But just the fact that, I don't know, like you can only begin to maybe hint at that, to make that a whole thesis of a book. Like, yeah, this happened. Is he saying, I mean, David, are you raising an eyebrow at me, or is that like something you take seriously, or what?
What's that?
The Joseph Farrell, like the space war thing.
Oh,
cosmic war.
I thought that's what you were making some gesture towards, but maybe not. So,
oh, you can see my face, and I look like I'm making a gesture.
No, you said
it's blue and
white. a vocal gesture.
I was actually, if you want to know my process, I'm thinking about what I was listening to last night from Peter Lavinda. You were talking about, you know, alternative historians or whatever.
Yeah.
And I've really been digging on the way that he approaches his stuff, particularly in resonance with us. I just, you know, Project Camelot, so often when they interview people, they use certain words like conclusions. They're like, so what conclusion have you come to now?
Mm.
And I just love how, like, him and, like, Hoagland will do the thing where they just don't really play into that so much. Like, he's like, well, I have my different ideas about whatever things could mean. But he's like, I'm just still just trying to, you know, make some sense of what I'm trying to make sense of on its own terms. Like, I don't even know where to begin to apply this in a larger sense. And he used the word coincidence and synchronicity, you know, to try and like communicate his point. He was like, I don't know where the, you know, like it's his argument for, you know, sinister forces, which is a reference to the missing 18 minutes of the Nixon interview. and so like that, you know, where he's like, he felt like there were sinister forces behind the missing stuff, you know? And so I'm down, you know, whatever. Yeah, there's definitely some sinister forces at play. You know, it's just I would qualify that a little differently myself, in the sense of, like, is something inherently evil, or is evil something that's a toxic that attaches itself to the thing? Like, you know, like with snot, if you have snot, snot is a very pure thing. It's crystalline. It's like, it's great, you know, when it first starts out and it goes into your body and it pulls in all the toxins, and then you bring it out, and then it's collecting the toxins. But it's this pure thing that's doing it. But people are like, oh, gross snot. Well, snot becomes gross. But, like, essentially, like, what snot is, you can't get any more pure, you know? Yeah. And so I relate to intelligences the same way. And that's the meaning of, like, the nullification of the Klippot and stuff. You know, people are like, you know, something's not inherently evil. And that can be misconstrued. And, like, it's been a tricky thing, you know? And Baruch hasn't really known exactly, I guess he has in his own way, but how to go about relaying that when he's doing his discourses on Kabbalah. Because it's like people have a lot of charge on the idea of evil. Or there's, you know, I think it's a lot to do with organized religion and stuff, of like the dualities that get presented and stuff. But this isn't a dualistic thing. I mean, it is on its level. You're like good and evil. But then, like, what is essential isn't either of those. It's just what it is. And so I can relate that. So, like, when I hear him talking about sinister forces, I put that into a different context in the way that I take it in. I'm not like, oh, these fucking demons or whatever, like demons themselves. Like, that's the thing. You have Shaddai, you know, that could be taken as angelic or demonic, you know, Matot. It's the six directions. Like, is the six directions evil? You know, I mean, the template of the, you know, the replication of that, like, is that an evil thing in and of itself? No, not necessarily. It's all in what, you know, someone's relating to it. You know, this makes sense.
It works for me.
Okay. Does it work for you?
Sure. Yeah. I actually got side. I was thinking it, Dark Missions of Hoagland's Dark Missions was like the first, one of the first weirdo books I ever bought. And I was like turned off because, the writing is just, it's a weird writing style and it's just not very good writing, but there are some things that popped out. Like, I visited JPL one time or a couple times, and one
from
of the
Pasadena.
Yeah. And, like, you go in and they take you into the, Theodore Van Karman, lecture auditorium, who David, supposedly he was a member of the A Star A or whatever a group, like, or at least that's what Hoagland proposes. And I read the book much later after this trip, but, in the orientation, they show an orientation video about NASA's history and trips and various missions and voyages and such. And it's narrated by Harrison Ford. And when they discuss the asteroid belt, which relates back to the cosmic war thing, possibly, because when they, I mean, they, this video, if you ask me, it insinuated that at one point it was a planet. And that was the question that I asked at JPL, if they had explored the idea of that being a planet at one point in time.
That's a Zachariah Sitchin theory, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I asked that question. The lady treated it like it's a question she had received before, which I was sort of entertained by. But her response was that they have explored such models. Only the material that's left that comprises the asteroid belt would make up a rather small planet. But they were like, we would love to go back and look into this further.
Huh.
I think we wanted to talk about catastrophe theory earlier, and then we got sidetracked. But it is a interesting hypothesis, and Velikovsky was sort of crucified because, oh God, we can't let mythology or religion in the back door with scientific theory. What if there was a flood, or even if there wasn't, it's a workable hypothesis. So the man wasn't insane, and he wasn't
Tiamat.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, well, if all these mythologies, yeah, archetypes and what have you, and these are universal to the collective unconscious, but every once in a while, I bet a real event is intermingled, like a global thing happens and people catalog it through their ciphers and what have you. So just the fact that that was part of it alone, it never got the time of day or the credit. I'm not saying it's the theory. I don't know how the universe began. I don't even give a shit. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, these arguments really don't matter, pragmatically. They're interesting, and I engage with them because I'm a territorial ape. But
I think that more as a nodal point of something that occurred, like, actually how you see it or perceive it is not necessarily what the specifics of it isn't necessarily what needs to be taken away, rather just like a, you know, exchange point.
At some point, right, I mean, an event happened. We got in front of something from nothing. It's a fascinating thing, or what larger construct are we part of? I mean, that to me is absent of whether we exploded out of a bubble or the universe has always existed and it's in a steady state. What's the difference? It's still an organism type situation. What's our place in that organism? As far as I'm concerned, it's not like I still don't believe in determinism per se, but there's something larger that we're a part of. It's weird. If you look at the Earth, you zoom out, it's like the trees are like flagellum. It's strange. You know, like, look at atoms too. They're all, or certain viruses. It depends on what we are. I don't know.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from the SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other SyncBook Radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.